like Sunday morning.
Well, 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 what a interesting morning after podcast we are about to have. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole on the day after BYU shocks Utah, pretty much dominates Utah, and gets the W, snaps the 9-game winning streak, and now the two teams will not play again until 2024. Hans, you were on the air late into the night, early into the morning. How are you, my friend? How are you holding up?
You know what? I'm doing really good, man. Woke up feeling really good this morning, and got a couple of Red Bulls in me. I've got some ecclesiastical duties that I got to attend to here in a few minutes, but what do I have better to do in the morning than talk more sports with my best friend?
Amen.
Dude, you don't drink coffee, do you?
Nope. Red Bull.
How are you so amped?
No, I'm not coffee. Little Bailey's in coffee. No, I don't do that.
Okay.
No coffee, just straight Red Bull.
The straight Red Bull.
Lloyd, Lloyd, how you holding up, man? You doing okay?
Oh, man, I had one too many snow cones, but I'm feeling great, though.
A little hair of the dog? You hanging in there okay?
Yeah, well, I'm chasing that with a Bloody Mary, so we're good.
A rusty nail?
A rusty nail.
Does your Bloody Mary come with a purse, bud? Are you chasing that with a Heineken?
No, I'm not chasing the Heineken. No, I'm eating a piece of celery out of it right now, actually.
Yeah. There you go. All right, we got a game to break down. I'll just start. And Hans, you and I talked a little bit on the post game show. And by the way, great job on the air until 2:30. We had, and I'm not joking. We had thousands of people on the stream last night that were listening in, and people on the air that were listening. Tons of phone calls. But Hans, the thing that I take away is BYU dominated, and I did not see that coming in the trenches. Offensive line, defensive line, and as the game went on, one team got stronger, another team kind of wilted away, and we just don't see that from the University of Utah. I'm surprised by what we saw with BYU really dominating up front where it counts.
Well, that's the big storyline right there, and I still have not seen anybody, and I would ask Tyson if he's out there. He's the great stats mind. The last time that the University of Utah had neither a sack nor a forced turnover in the rivalry game. Utah did not have a sack or a forced turnover against BYU in this game. And I think that says so much about the way this game played out. Now, BYU ended up in the +2 category. They had a forced fumble. They had an interception. But Utah unable to produce the sacks, to produce the turnovers, and look at the result. It was huge. And you're right, Scotty, going on to the BYU defensive line side of things. We saw Mahe blow through the line and hit Makai Bernard as Makai was getting a handoff, like 8 yards deep because an H-back couldn't hit the trap. Like, there were multiple plays. Oh, the 4th and 2. And Lloyd, yep. I'll hand this over to you. You got that 4th and 2 where BYU's defense, they put 7 in the box. They keep the outside linebackers on all eyes watch. Utah tries the zone read. BYU shuts it down. Do you think that was even the right? I mean, should they have gone for it at 4th and 2? Do you kick the field goal? What do you do there?
Well, hindsight's 20/20. We all know this. After the game, I'm like, man, those 3 points would have been really nice to have for the youth. But at that time, I'm thinking to myself, well, go for it, because one, it's you're going to get the ball in the second half. BYU hasn't really been able to move the ball all that much, for the most part. I mean, the defense was Utah's defense was somewhat doing their job, up until that point. And so I thought it was a call. Was it the right play call? I hate the shotgun draw when you're trying to get 2 yards or a yard, whatever. Like, they just, I think we've been saying this for a while now that they need to do away when you, for short yardage plays, they need to do away with that. Put the quarterback under center, and I don't know if they're going to get it or not, but let that running back get a running start and see what you can do. But the draw from the shotgun, I hate it, and I'm probably not the only one on this phone call that hates this.
No, I hate it. I don't like the draw. Now, well, it was a zone read, and, you know, essentially that's the delayed draw, but it's a zone read. It's the quarterback making the decision based off of
right.
what that outside linebacker is doing. But Charlie Brewer's not going to keep it. As an outside linebacker, I'm able to pinch a little bit tighter yeah. knowing that I'm going to be able to get to that edge if Brewer does keep and try to bend around. And that's exactly what they did. They shuffled, saw Brewer hand it. And it is kind of the delayed draw look. And then you're trying to come downhill from a four-yard snap. I don't like it either. Everybody can defend it. Kyle Whittingham did in the post game. He was like, if I did it again tomorrow, the statistics tell us that that's a situation where you go for it and we still feel like this was the play to run. I disagree. I hate that play in fourth and two. On the whatever you were, what were they, like the 10-yard line or something?
No, I think they were, it was like right there near, just barely inside the 10-yard line. And I hate the play as well. I'm with you on that. But, you know, you talk about the turnovers hands. I understand why Whittingham did it simply because, now I know BYU had gone down and gotten points on the previous drive, but you're thinking to yourself, bare minimum, okay, if they stop us, our defense might get a three and out, or there's no way BYU goes down and scores. But you look at those two turnovers, they really weren't a huge issue in the game because those two turnovers only resulted in 3 points for BYU. They went three and out after the first one. They got the second one, they were able to get a field goal. So the turnovers kind of were a non-issue. It was that drive that right before halftime, when Utah's got a chance to go into halftime up 14-10, instead, you know, BYU just mows down the field, gets the touchdown. I know they missed the extra point, but it's all of a sudden, instead of being up 14-10, you're down 16-7. It's a two possession game. And you're looking around and saying, whoa, how did that happen? And BYU took that momentum into halftime and they were not giving it up. That, to me, not getting that fourth down, not getting that touchdown, and then giving up the touchdown on the other end, to me, that was ball game right there. I mean, we didn't know it at the time, but in hindsight, that's the biggest stretch of this game that allowed BYU to carry that momentum. And then they pinned their ears back the rest of the game, and it was lights out.
That was when that 3 points, from that point, from when they scored, went down and scored, that was when you looked at that 3 points, you're like, wow.
Yep.
I feel like they should have gotten that 3 points. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking Kyle Whittingham saying to himself right there, man, I wish we would have gotten those 3 points right there from that point on.
I've got a real question mark on the offensive game plan going into that game.
Amen to this. Yes.
It's creativity is lacking creativity. There were no wrinkles. There were no real adjustments when the zone read was getting shut down. And when the defense was clouding so much with different routes, and Brewer was getting balls batted and was getting pressured and getting hit, and it was like I kept waiting, like, okay, now what? Now how do you get Keithy involved? Like, where is the Keithy movement and end around that used to be so violent and so consistent for 10-15 yards and force defenses to watch his motion and respect those end arounds? And like, there was nothing that I watched last night in that offense game plan and thought, oh, there it is. That's what they worked on in spring ball. That's what they worked on in fall camp. That's what they worked on when they were supposed to be game planning for Weber State. None of that. It was just lame. It was just a base offensive game plan, and it didn't work.
Vanilla, if you will.
Yeah, you can keep running with that. Keep hitting that vanilla.
It felt pretty vanilla.
It was vanilla. It was Bavarian cream.
No.
You know what this game reminded me of? Like, it reminded me of just, like, going to the game, you're thinking, you know, the talk was Charlie Brewer and how good he really looked in kind of that Weber State game and how accurate he was. And
yeah,
it felt like Utah's offense was going to put up a lot of points, and BYU's defense, you know, wasn't going to be able to do much. And Utah's defense was probably going to do a lot. It reminded me of the Pac-12 championship game against Oregon when you kept waiting for, you know, you thought Utah was, this is their moment. They're going to win that game. But you're thinking, you kept waiting the entire game for something to happen. Finally, something does, you know, and, you know, keepy touchdown or whatever. And you're like, okay, here comes Utah. And it just never happened.
Never turned.
Like, never happened. Like, you guys talked about it. Like, we talked about it earlier in the week. Like, you don't want to go in the locker room and think, look up at the scoreboard and be like, wow, what's going on? And try to put some smelling salt and try to wake up and have to come back. And that's exactly what happened in the game. It's exactly what happened.
You know, but
have you ever seen a Kyle Whittingham team so flat
No.
in a rivalry game?
Not in a rivalry game, no. I mean, I think Lloyd brings up a good point in terms of we've seen some games sprinkled in where you saw some weird effort or you saw a weird game plan, but I don't remember a Kyle Whittingham. I mean, look, BYU in the Kyle Whittingham era, and Lloyd, you can try to go back a little bit into the time when Hans was playing football and you know, weren't actively engaged into this rivalry, but you know, you go back to 05 and there is not a time where BYU won this game by double digits. I mean, it's just never happened before. It's always, if BYU wins, it's a one possession game. And there's never been a game where it felt like, I mean, even in the second half when it was, you know, a 9-point game, it felt like it was a 17-point game. Like it always felt like Utah was always scrambling and always behind the chains and always just two steps behind BYU the entire game. Just felt like that the entire second half. And even when, you know, Bernard, who was the only guy that showed a little gumption out there, the only guy that really felt like there was some emotion with him, with his running, when he gets that touchdown, it's a one possession game. You're thinking, okay, here you go. And BYU just mows right down the field and puts it back to a two touchdown game. And by all accounts, pretty much puts it away. So you're right. I've never really felt like we've seen a game like this from a Kyle Whittingham team in this rivalry. It's just, we just don't see it. It's never happened before until last night.
It looked like Bernard was the only person that has ever even played in this game, in the rivalry game. He looked like the only one that ever know, like, hey, this is like a rivalry game. It's like a big game in the state. Like, well, looked at those players and it was like, wow, these guys don't even know what this game's about.
I kept waiting for Devin Lloyd to have that hit or to have that pick. Like we saw against Weber State. Like, I kept waiting for Mika Tafua to bat a ball up in the air and come down with it and have the BYU fan base go silent and think to themselves, well, here we go again. And the big playmakers that we talked about last week making the plays, they didn't make the plays. And you're right, Lloyd, Mekhi Bernard, but it wasn't until later. Yeah. Fabian had a fumble and was kind of pulled out, and then they're like, okay, Mekhi, go save us. And Mekhi had one run that was classic, could have been legendary status if they could have pulled the win out. But it wasn't until later that Mekhi Bernard really turned on the Jets.
Yeah. I wonder if he's
and the... I think, have we seen the last of not the last, though, but Tavian Thomas, like, has Whit seen, like, he's like, okay, you fumble the ball enough. Like, I've never seen anybody hold the ball so loosely.
So he had the fumble, Lloyd, and then Scotty, help me remember. They had a review.
There was another one he put on the ground, but he had the knee was barely down before, and they ruled it a non-fumble. I mean, they ruled him down on the field, and then replay reviewed it. But I mean, you're just about an eighth, you know, just a millisecond away from that ball coming out and him fumbling it again. I think. Going, and I know Bernard had to start in this game. I think, you know, you know, I kind of felt like Tavian Thomas was going to be the guy. And I got that impression when we talked to Kyle Whittingham earlier in the week that it might be him. But I think it might be Bernard going forward that starts to separate himself from the rest of this team or rest of that running back group.
I do too. And I don't know about you, Lloyd, but do you feel like there's a Booker or a Moss or a John White, or do you feel like there's any of that in this four-man group at running back?
I don't know if there is. I really don't. I'm not quite sure. Like you talked about Bernard, a lot of these yards happened late. Like they kept them pretty bottled up for the most part. These yards came late. The thing is, like, I feel like, you know, Michael Bernard, I feel like his pass protection isn't great. And then Tavian Thomas, his pass protection's better, but he doesn't hold on to the ball. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong on Bernard, but I saw a guy go, and I'm trying to remember, it was like in the first quarter, went right around Bernard and put the pressure on Brewer. And I thought, went right around him. I think it was Peely that might have went
Mackay did miss a few blocks. I did see one in particular where he picked up the blitz, and it's actually one that I highlighted on my Twitter account, and it shows a six-man blitz by BYU, and Mackay picked it up. But I know which one you're talking about that ended up forcing the pressure. And it happened against Weber State, too. Sometimes he gets his body shifted too far inside, and linebackers are able to beat him to his outside with just a quick rip or you know, just a quick hip shift. He needs to do a better job of greeting them at the line, which he did do in that one instance that I tweeted out. You can see he actually comes up to the line and meets the linebacker instead of trying to brace and wait and then dropping his head and getting slapped over to the side. He's got to pick up his pass pro. There's no question.
He's probably the closest thing to what they have, in probably about what they need in a running back. But you know what we need now, and though we it's time for you to really love up this BYU offensive line and what they did.
Yeah.
How about what they did?
200 yards rushing tonight. Never thought we'd see BYU go for a deuce against this Utah defense.
It was impressive, guys. And I'll do more film review to get a better feel for how they were cutting edges. And they just played a really good game. There are a couple things that I recall from last night. They did a really good job in all their pass sets, you know, really just taking their great jabs, that good first step, throwing the hands in the chest, and really nice, well-formed pass sets. And then I think that one thing I saw on the play side of runs, you could tell that they had really focused on sticking on the down linemen. And I don't know if they'd gotten themselves in a little trouble against Arizona of breaking off the combos early. But what I saw was they were taking a D tackle and a double team 2 or 3 yards. And you could almost see it was like a dismissal of the next level. Like, okay, well, we're going to take this guy down. And they really emphasized sticking on those combo blocks. I would almost say to a fault, but they did an okay job of breaking off. It's just you saw a lot of great grinding runs. You didn't see a lot of them break where second levels were caught. But I just can't say enough good about Barrington and James Impey and Connor Pay, who has pick things up at that guard position, and Blake Freeland, who has stepped in and done a great job, and LaChance, who's having to really pick up the slack since Brady Christensen's left. And it is a solid group, but it's thin, but they are staying healthy. They are diligent, and they're unified. new offensive line coach, I think, has done a pretty good job of keeping that consistency that Jeff Grimes and Mateos had built. But guys, we're two games in. I know it's an impressive two-game Pac-12 winning streak that BYU's on, but I do need to see this same level of performance against Arizona State. And that's our next kind of next topic, like conversation coming up in our week of shows. Arizona State's a different beast. They're another beast. They're just going to be a completely different beast.
How about pass protection? I mean, you mentioned, BYU or Utah didn't get any turnovers. They also didn't get any sacks. And it seemed like there wasn't a lot of creativity from a blitz package standpoint. They didn't throw a lot of fronts. They didn't throw a lot of stuff at Jaren Hall. You could tell that they really were respecting his ability to get out of the pocket because it didn't seem like they were letting guys pin their ears back and really get aggressive in getting after him. I was a little surprised by that because Jaren had time to move around. Mm-hmm. And once he had time, he was able to pick him apart. There were some times where, especially that last drive at the first half, it looked like almost a 7-on-7 drill.
And that'll be an easy look. When I put together my full film review, I'll look at that because you can see when defensive linemen are being more taught to respect their gap. But the problem is, Scotty, is if they were trying to do that, you know, four downs on the spy, what they did to Zach Wilson back in 2018, I think it was, or 2019, yeah. Whatever it was, when they were doing the kind of the hit and drop spies, it'll show pretty quickly. But Jaren, if they were doing that, Jaren Hall still ate them up.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So looking ahead, obviously right now you're looking at Utah going to San Diego State. Aztecs, by the way, put it on Arizona. At one point I saw it was like 35-10. I did not see what the final score is. I'll try to pull it up here real quick. But San Diego State just crushed Arizona. After Arizona had some, you know, some decent moments against BYU in the second half of that game last week. So, and that game was in Tucson too. So San Diego State's, they're a good team and Utah's got to face them. And then of course, as you mentioned, Hans, BYU takes on Arizona State.
But they used to have them at home, right?
They're going to San Diego.
I'll be sarcastic.
In fact, I think they might be digging up the old bones of Qualcomm Stadium. Playing on that nasty. Where's San Diego State even playing?
I forget where they're at now.
Yeah, Arizona gets San Diego State to come out to Tucson, and Utah gets stuck going out there. How did that work?
I think that was a little Chris Hill thing too. I remember they still have a trip they've got to take to Wyoming too, don't they? Or was that supposed to be last year?
Yeah, that was it was supposed to be last year.
Oh, was that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, they lucked out that.
Yeah, I think that was the one good thing that came out of COVID for them. they got to not go to Laramie. But
yeah, it was
San Diego State. Yeah. You better shake off this loss.
That game was 35-7 at halftime with San Diego State. The final was 38-14.
Jeez.
Wow.
And then Arizona State.
They're shake this off.
Arizona State had some struggles. Now, they pulled away late, but they had some struggles early against UNLV. And then finally, they, in the fourth quarter, ran away and hid, and it was 37-10. But it was a one-possession game throughout the first three quarters of that game. So, I mean, that's why I really felt pretty comfortable about thinking BYU was going to win a bunch of games this year because the names of who they were playing are pretty significant. But, I mean, USC, heck, Stanford scores 42 on USC. Clay Helton's not going to finish the year. Hell, Clay Helton may not be coaching next week after this game.
Oh, yeah, they got worked. Worked by a Stanford team that got worked the week before against Kansas State.
Yeah.
So USC.
It is, right?
Okay, so I'm trying to figure this out. Did the Pac-12 take a step forward or a step back yesterday?
No, they took overall. They took a step back. I mean, Oregon's great, but other than that, it was a bad day. TCU won. Texas A&M won, barely. Washington State played an FCS team. That doesn't count. Michigan puts it on Washington. BYU
Stanford
wins.
Stanford screwed things up.
Yeah, Stanford screwed the conference by beating USC.
Pac-12, just let's just be honest. They don't want to play in the college football playoff. Can we just say it? They don't want to.
They still have UCLA and Oregon. So,
well, yeah, they do. But Hans, you said in the pregame, Oregon's going to go to like Washington State and lose by 20 because that's just what happens.
Yeah, they will. Something will happen
because they barely squeaked by Fresno State, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure who they are exactly yet. I mean, don't get me wrong, that was impressive to go into the horseshoe and do what they did. Like that was a fun game to watch. But
yeah, they looked good.
I don't know who they are.
By the way, how bad is Washington? Holy smokes! Michigan.
What was the final on there? How bad? I know we were watching that during our BYU and Utah pregame show, Scotty. I just wondered how bad did Michigan end up beating them?
Final ended up being 31-10, but it kind of felt like a lot more than that.
Well, that felt like a lot.
That's a lot. As of right now, Oregon is in prime. Oregon runs the table after that win, you got a college football playoff team there. So everybody just better get out of the way and let Oregon do their thing so everybody can cash a pretty good check.
And don't look now, but BYU might win the South. Hello?
Yeah.
Is this thing on?
Yeah, I got you.
That's 1-2. Check.
What are you going to do the Pac-12 plus Mount West Conference plus Utah State Purple? Is that what you're doing here, Luke?
That's a blast in the past.
I know you used to help with that every time.
No, I did. That wasn't my thing. Nope.
Guys, do we have a special BYU team on our hands?
We could. I don't want to get too fired up because, you know, last time that happened, 2014 rolled around and then Taysom Hill got hurt and then that season came to a screeching halt pretty quick.
Jaren scrambled a lot more than I would like him probably to. So that makes me a little leery, I think. Scrambling as much as he, moving around as much as he had to.
Yeah. He needs to calm it down a bit. What do you think BYU's chances are against Arizona State?
I wonder what the line's going to be on that one. I'll say Arizona State probably -4, 4.5. What do you think?
So you think Arizona State coming into Lavelle Edwards Stadium will be an underdog? Probably.
No. I think Arizona State will be a slight favorite.
Oh, is that what you? Okay. Yeah. I thought you said they'd be +4.
No, I said minus. I think 3.5, 4 around there.
So, man, I know that that's going to be a physical team. They just saw though that Arizona State knows what they're in for every time they play against Utah. You do wonder, and what I mean by that is they just saw what BYU did to Utah. They out-Utahed Utah. I had a caller in the post-game show say that Kalani Sitake out-Whittingham'd Whittingham. And I actually think there's a lot to that, and he did. It was kind of like finally watching the pupil beat the teacher. And Kalani thanked Kyle Whittingham for everything he had taught him, and it was like, yeah, you kind of used it against him.
The son outfished the dad.
Yeah, finally. And Arizona State saw it, and they probably got a pretty good taste for the versatility of that defense. I just don't know. I got to go back and start really looking at that Arizona State talent. Are we seeing any of the effects that we thought we might see with the distractions from them holding like 34 recruiting councils while everybody else was taking shelter from COVID?
I think so. Probably. I think there's some results.
Who did they play? Who did they play? Dinner? UNLV. That's right.
Yeah. And it wasn't, like I mentioned, it wasn't a pretty game. Yeah, I'm trying to find some.
UNLV even had a lead there for, from what I remember.
I'm trying to find an early line on this game. I can't see it, but we'll obviously find out pretty quickly what we're looking at. But I would say Arizona State a slight favorite, but I don't know. That'd be interesting. That place was rocking, by the way. I know, Hans, you were talking to a few people that were at the game. Sounds like that stadium was just an incredible environment tonight.
Huge. Huge environment. The post game had quite a few callers that were just coming from the stadium. People's voices obviously hoarse. We were just walking out of the pregame show and the flyby went right over our heads, about blew my eardrums out. You know, good recognition of what our country was reflecting on yesterday with 9/11. And it was, I think everybody embraced that. They embraced this rivalry game. Every seat looked full and they were out of their minds. I have not had a chance to talk to Rock yet this morning, but Rock was there at the game with a bunch of other recruits that were there at the game. And, you know, I saw pictures. BYU, they know how to treat recruits. They know how to recruit. And it was pretty impressive. And those kids, most of them for the first time in their lifetime, got to see BYU win. And they got to see a packed Lavelle Edwards Stadium like it used to be when I played.
And it didn't look like there. Normally, there's a, you know, lately anyways, when it didn't look like there was a lot of Utah fans there. Like, it looked like they owned it and just took, and like, there just didn't look like there was any Utah fans.
Was there a Utah section? I didn't ever see a pan out to see if there was like usually there's a full Utah corner.
There could have been, but those the cameras on ESPN were so bad, like it was just blurry watching. I didn't even know I kept checking my TV to see if I actually had HD. And I was like, is this not HD?
Yeah, it wasn't good.
It was so bad. I was like, what is wrong with ESPN's cameras?
Yeah.
But I didn't notice on the student section, but it looked blue, like with a couple pieces of dots of red here and there, but that's it.
That place was going crazy, and it's pretty cool. And you know, when the Big 12 announcement came down, I was thinking about some of our late Mount West Conference pushes, and, you know, we'd get New Mexico or we'd get Wyoming. I mean, they're not these juggernaut programs, but when we were trying to close out on a Mount West Conference title back in the late 1990s and early 2000s, there wasn't an empty seat in the stadium, and I'm hopeful off this Big 12 announcement, we see that stadium consistently fill up in November again. You know, these recruits need to see that because Rice-Eccles Stadium, you know, I know everybody can make fun of them. They announced a sellout against Weber State, and it looked like it was about 50% full, but the truth be told, they've still sold out that stadium. They've got a consecutive sell streak that's a nice lengthy one. And you know, when Cal is in that stadium in late November, it's going to be sold out. And I'm kind of hoping now here in 2023, Lavelle Edwards Stadium can get back to that sellout level. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I want more than just a rivalry game to be sold out here in Lavelle Edwards Stadium.
Well, I'd say if you're BYU, you follow that up with another packed house against Arizona State, because can't have a hangover. Can't let up, because Arizona State will run right past you if you're not careful.
Will that be a sellout, you think, next weekend?
Probably.
Oh, yes.
You think so?
Well, I think so. Where BYU's got this momentum, don't you think, Lloyd?
The momentum of the Big 12. They just beat the rival after 12 years. There's no way that thing's not so. I would be shocked if that thing's not so.
Well, it better be. I mean, you certainly hope so.
it sure felt like they were riding the emotion of their fan base in that rivalry game.
By the way, we'll be giving away tickets to that game throughout the week, so keep listening to The Zone, because I've got 3 pair of tickets that we'll be giving away. Each show will have a pair of tickets to give away. So,
man, Scotty Claus is the best.
I know. I know. I'm not quite Bullsby Claus, but I do my best. So.
Oh, hey, all you BYU fans, put out your milk and cookies. Scotty Claus is coming.
All right, gentlemen. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, all right?
I feel like Hans already hung up.
Hans, are you going?
You there?
Is this a fake hang up?
No. You hang up. No, you hang
no,
up.
No, you hang up.
I am still here, man. It's definitely a long night and an early morning, but, you know, I just love our listeners. And I know that they need a little bit of Lloyd Cole in them on a Sunday morning.
Stop it. Why do you got to make it weird at the end? Why do you got to do that?
Oh, man. All right. That's Hans Olsen. That's Lloyd Cole. I'm Scott Gerard. You've been listening to the Morning After Podcast. Remember, we'll be back at it Monday, 10 a.m. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.